Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Welcome to the FFSN NFL Draft Preview. My name is Jeremy Betts. I'm here to help me break down every angle of the 2024 NFL Draft is my good buddy Andrew Wilbar. Andrew, how's it going, man?
It's going well. The draft is not that far from now. I'm excited. Nothing I like more than talking NFL Draft with you, Jeremy. Looking forward to these next couple months.
Absolutely. 8 or so weeks until the draft kicks off, and there's a lot to discuss. What we're going to do here on this show is we're going to break things down. Probably over the first 4 weeks or so, we're going to give you some more generic topics to discuss about the NFL draft, go over position groups, some of the top players, maybe a mock draft or so here and there. We'll get to those. And then to close it out, the last 4 weeks before the draft, we're going to dive into each division and break down each division by team needs according to the needs that our staff members here at FFSN for each of the different teams in the NFL, what they have determined are the top needs for their team. So these are the guys that know these teams the best. These are the guys that are in with these teams, and they're going to know what these teams are looking for. That's what we're going to break down as we get a little bit closer to the draft. But Andrew, today for this show, we're going to do our top five players by position for the offense. Really, your top five players by position, and I'll throw in all the disagreements I have because I know there's going to be a huge amount of them, and we will get to all of that. Andrew, before we get into breaking down each position, though, just real quick, give us an overview of the offense, maybe some positions of strength, maybe some weaker position groups, or anything that just stands out to you about the offensive draft class overall.
Well, it's very top-heavy, but I think there's a lot of depth, too. We talk about the receiver position. I think there's a lot of positions on the offensive side of the ball, specifically in the offensive line, where there's a lot of depth this year. This draft, just in general, is so much better than last year. It's not even close. But especially on the offensive side of the ball. At the top, you don't have a lot of great defenders, but you do have some depth there. And I think you're going to see some of these guys in the middle rounds that maybe have second or third round grades. You're going to see some of these guys slip to day three because that's when teams are going to opt for the defense. You're going to see a lot of teams going for either a wide receiver or offensive lineman in round one because that's the way the NFL is trendy and that's what teams need right now. I think that as you get into day two, you're going to see some of these mid-round prospects fall a little bit on draft day, not because of them necessarily, but just because of the depth of the draft. Not everyone can go in those second and third rounds. So I think there's going to be an opportunity for a lot of NFL teams to get a gem, whether it be a wide receiver, or even running back. We see that happen every year on day three of the draft.
Yeah, a beautiful year for the value play. If you're looking for depth of position groups, there's going to be options for you in the middle rounds because, like you said, a lot of these guys are going to go early at maybe one or two position groups, and then some of these other guys are going to start falling down draft boards. You might be able to get good value at a position that is maybe a little bit less of a big deal to teams, if you will.
Right.
So we're going to talk about all of that, but let's jump into the quarterbacks to start things out, and let's break it down. Give me your top five here, just in a row, and then let's talk about the guys at the top. So just go ahead and list off your top five quarterbacks here for us, Andrew.
I've got Caleb Williams. We'll get into him in a second, the potential risks that comes with him, but I do have him one. The big thing for me is I do have Jaden Daniels slightly ahead of Drake May at number two. Not that I dislike Drake May, but I just think the upside and the dual threat ability of Daniels in the right system gives him a little bit higher upside. And we've just seen a little bit more clutch from him, at least his time at LSU. And then number four, I have JJ McCarthy. He's the last of my first round grade quarterbacks. And then I have Michael Penix Jr. at number five.
It's a good list. And, you know, there's a lot of people talking about Caleb Williams, Drake May, even as really can't miss prospects at the position. Do you view those guys in that same light, or are there issues that could come to light for these guys that would prevent them from becoming the generational talents that many believe that they are?
I don't think there's any can't miss prospect. Most people are saying that that's Caleb Williams, but you and I have talked before on our other show, The Steelers Fix, on the Steel Curtain Network, that there are concerns with Williams just as it pertains to his effort in general. You saw this past year, he cannot overcome every challenge that is brought his way. He had some bad decision making. Not all of them always resulted in interceptions, but a lot of balls that could have been interceptions, he was not afraid to throw it into double and triple coverage. Sometimes he trusts himself a little bit too much. There's a fine line between confidence and cockiness. And cockiness isn't always just boasting outwardly. It is just the way that a person goes about his business mentally as well. And that's a concern for me with Caleb Williams. When you watch him play, sometimes he feels like he has a little bit too much confidence in his game. Like they have everything under control. And then when something goes wrong, like what happened? And we saw him there was a lot of people talking about him crying after that game this past season at USC, and can make a bunch of stuff about that. I don't know if he is mentally tough enough to handle the NFL. He's been handed everything on a silver platter throughout college, being able to follow Lincoln Riley and all that situation. That's a big concern for me with Williams. With May, it's just the consistency. He's got the arm. He's got the prototypical body size. The Justin Herbert comparisons, in my opinion, are very valid.
Yes.
Now, I wasn't super high on Herbert. I have a much higher grade on May, probably because I see him as a guy who can fit the ball into tight windows on a little bit more consistent basis. There was still a little bit of inconsistency this past year, but let's not forget he did lose Josh Downs to the NFL. Herbert had still a lot of talent on that offense, and we'll get into Walker, the wide receiver from North Carolina, when we get to wide receivers maybe in a later episode. But as it pertains to May, I feel the big concern is just going to come down to consistency and big games. He didn't always play the best in the big games, and neither did Herbert. And in all honesty, Herbert hasn't really done that well at the NFL level either, and that's what's held the Chargers back from reaching new heights. So it's a valid concern with May. I think he can be a solid quarterback. And then with Daniels, it's just, can he continue the trend that he is on and getting through his progressions, developing more as a passer? He's taken leaps and bounds. You know, he's, in my opinion, he's way ahead of Lamar Jackson or even Justin Fields, really, where he was at in his progression. But we've seen Justin Fields even improve in just the way that he goes about getting through his progressions and at least knowing when to use his legs, when the offensive scheme allows him to use them. It's just being smart with his body and making smart decisions with the football. And Daniels did a really good job of that this past year. That's why I have him ahead of May. But I don't believe there is any can't miss prospect in this draft that you can say this guy is for sure going to be a star long term to come. There's high percentage, but I wouldn't say there's a 100% chance you got a guy in here that's going to just be a stud.
Yeah, the theme to me for this group is size concerns, and there's going to be some of those talking points throughout the draft process here. You've got Caleb Williams, who's 6'1", maybe 210 pounds. That's not prototypical size for a quarterback. I mean, you're talking Baker Mayfield for a size comparison there, basically. And then you've got guys like Jaden Daniels, who's a slider built quarterback. He's tall enough, but he's slider built. JJ McCarthy, slider built as well. Michael Penix Jr., some guys further down the list, Bo Nix, Spencer Rattler, Michael Pratt, Jordan Travis, those guys all kind of fit in the top 10 group that you've put together on fansfirstsports.com. And all of those guys could have size concerns as far as, are they going to be able to handle it at the NFL level, the beating that they could get. But let's just real quick before we move on from the quarterbacks, let's talk JJ McCarthy, Michael Penix. A lot of people have those guys flipped in their rankings. But why do you have McCarthy ahead of Penix?
Penix, the biggest thing is the injury concerns. And we saw in that game, he got really rattled under pressure. JJ McCarthy, there were times where he doesn't sense the pressure quite as much as he should, especially coming from his blind side. But you cannot argue the fact that he doesn't get rattled by too much. He stays pretty calm inside the pocket. And when he gets out, he's really dangerous with his legs. With Penix, it really comes down to the injury concerns. He's an older prospect. JJ McCarthy just turned 21. So he's coming into the league a little bit younger. I think he's the long-term upside play because of his dual threat ability. With Penix, you just have to wonder how long can he continue with this. I mean, he was even getting a little bit banged up toward the end of that national championship game by getting hit so often. And that was a good offensive line that he had at Washington throughout the year. I think there is a wide separation. There's going to be a team that's going to fall in love with JJ McCarthy. I think he's going to be a top 12 pick because of the dire need for quarterbacks around the league. And with Penix, there's just too big of an injury risk. I struggle to think that there's going to be a general manager saying out there, if this guy's had four season ending injuries in 6 years, yeah, he's got the talent, but how is he going to adapt one to the NFL scheme? We have to adapt our system because one, he is a left-handed quarterback. It's not something that you take off your draft board for, but there's a lot of baggage, not bad off-field baggage with Michael Penix, but just injury concerns that have mounted up over time. I couldn't warrant taking him in the first round, maybe once you get to day two. But to me, JJ McCarthy is clearly the quarterback four in this class. I think he's going to be more grouped with those top three guys by the time we get to April than we will be with the Bo Nixes, Michael Penix. And I'd even add that I think Bo Nix has a chance to leap Michael Penix Jr. if he has a strong combine performance. Yep.
I agree. And the quarterbacks, as always, will be the driving force of the draft, the big talking point. So we'll have a lot more content on the quarterbacks as we continue moving forward with this show and others. Let's go to a position group that's not going to be quite as highlighted with big names, all right? And that's the running back group. We don't have to spend a lot of time on this group. It kind of falls off pretty quick. And I wouldn't say there's a first round running back in this group, would you?
I wouldn't. I think Jordan, I'm not a fan of taking a running back in the first round at all, but I think Brooks from Texas would have had a chance if not for the injury. It appears that he'll be healthy. He should be good to go for training camp and everything. But I do not believe you're going to see a first round running back.
Yeah, as opposed to last year where we saw two very early in the draft. This is not one of those years. You have Jonathan Brooks from Texas at number one, Trey Benson from Florida State at number two, and then at three, Blake Corum from Michigan, number four, Audric Estime, Notre Dame, and number five, Rasheen Ali from Marshall. Anybody stand out to you from that group as a guy that could maybe improve his draft stock as we get a little closer to draft day through the combine, pro days, whatever type of workouts that he will go through?
I think the one guy on this list that could is Audric Estime from Notre Dame, just because of the size. If he runs a fast 40, that's going to get a lot of people excited when you have that size and the speed to go together. Oh, could he be the next Nick Chubb? You know, he's going to get those comparisons if he runs well in the 40. Brooks can't do anything to improve his stock because of the injury. Corum, I think he's going to test pretty well, but the tape speaks for itself. He's going to be a day two pick because of the tread that he's been exposed to. And after that, you're looking at a lot of late day two, early day three guys. So I think the one guy who has a chance to really boost the stock would be Estime if he tests well in Indy.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the things about this running back group is you've got more role players than full-time three down backs, I think you could say, in this group. So that kind of limits their upside a little bit. Jonathan Brooks, Trey Benson, Audric Estime could be considered a workhorse back, but even Blake Corum seems to have a cap kind of on what he can do as a three down workhorse style back. So we'll have to see how that all plays out. But for the running back specifically, is there anybody just outside this top five maybe that you think might be able to push their way into that before we move on to the wide receivers?
I think Jawar Jordan does, just because of his speed in the open field. He's going to get a lot of comparisons to the Coastal Carolina running back that Baltimore took undrafted last year and had a really good season for Baltimore. Keaton Mitchell. I think one guy that's going to get a lot of comparisons to Blake Corum is Cody Schrader. They're built very similar. Schrader is not quite as athletic as Corum is, but I think he's a guy who, again, just consistently grinds out consistent yardage on the ground. And I think that there's going to be a lot of teams that are going to like that. He'll probably fall to early day three, but I think somebody's going to pick him up and they're going to get a solid running back. You're talking a guy who could be maybe, could be literally a poor man's Blake Corum. I compare Corum to a rich man's Jaylen Warren. So if you're looking at Schrader, maybe you're looking at an ideal Jaylen Warren type running back. So it'll be interesting to see what he runs in the 40, but let's not forget Jaylen Warren didn't test the greatest either.
Absolutely. And nothing can measure hard on the field. And that's the type of player Jaylen Warren is. That's the type of player Blake Corum is as well. Their want to exceeds everything else. So hey, let's move on to the wide receivers, Andrew, because this is a group that's going to get a lot of hype going into the draft. You've got five guys here that really could be in the first round conversation. All five of them. I mean, there's conversations for guys outside your top five in the first round potentially as well. This is one of those things. If you had to make a prediction right now, how many wide receivers would you say go in round one?
I'm going to say six for now. I think there's the potential for up to eight. I don't think we see eight just because, again, the depth, it's not that it's just top heavy. There's depth too. And there's, if I'm a team that has a need to offensive line as well as wide receiver, I'm taking the offensive lineman first. Not that there isn't great depth there, but you're not going to find a stud tackle on day two. You're going to get the good serviceable guys or a boomer bust project. At wide receiver, you have the chance. We see a lot of receivers every year that go in the second and third rounds that become, in many cases, wide receiver ones for their team. We saw what Rashee Rice was this year for Kansas City and what he could develop into. We've seen what happened to A.J. Brown several years back when he was with Tennessee. You don't have to take a receiver in the first round for him to develop into a wide receiver one. And, I mean, George Pickens is another name to add to that list. And if you ask me, I think Marvin Harrison Jr., he's, in my opinion, the best player in this draft.
Yeah,
ahead of Caleb Williams, ahead of anybody. He's my number one player in this draft. Odunze and Neighbors, I'm not quite as high on in general. I still have top 15 grades on them, but I don't see them as legit top 10 picks because neither of them. Neighbors, I'm almost tempted to move Neighbors above Odunze because Odunze, not every pass was delivered greatly in that national championship game, but there were a couple times where they were catchable balls and he was not able to come down with them. And those are the games that define really your draft stock. So we'll see again, this is the position that probably matters more than just about any for the combine and the combine numbers, corners, receivers, those skill positions. But I would say if there's one name that isn't getting as much buzz that a lot of people are saying is slipping on boards, and I don't really understand why, is Keon Coleman. He was inconsistent, but his targets were also inconsistent. And it's he's very much like George Pickens in the sense that he doesn't always look like he's open, but he finds a way to come down with the ball because he's so acrobatic. He has outstanding body control, and he is just a freak of nature. And I think he warrants a first-round pick. We've seen enough of him. Leggett, I liked him before the injury at the Senior Bowl. I still do like him. But you got Brian Thomas Jr., Adonai Mitchell. Yeah. You got a bunch of these 6'4 wide receivers that could run the 4.4s. I mean, these guys aren't just little puny guys. They're athletes.
Absolutely. I mean, I think of a guy like Keon Coleman in a system with a quarterback who can put the ball on you accurately. That's the type of place that's going to be best suited for him. Imagine him in a Kansas City Chiefs uniform. That would be intense for the rest of the AFC when you've got a quarterback in Patrick Mahomes who can put the ball wherever he wants to, a guy like Keon Coleman who can take it away, who's always open. That is the type of player that they could really, really use. Anybody, Andrew, I think Xavier Leggett has kind of been, he's been polarizing for a lot of scouts. What do you see in his game that shows promise? And then also what do you see that could be a little bit of a drag on his draft stock?
Well, he's only had one good year of consistent production. He was hardly utilized any previous season. So it's like, okay, is it just a one-year wonder? He's athletic as all get out. I believe he clocked at like 22 miles an hour, 23 miles an hour. Was one of the fastest timed receivers in pads this past year on a touchdown reception early in the season. I'm curious to see how tall he measures. I've seen some measurements of 6'1". I've seen some at 6'3". If he measures in at 6'3", 230 pounds, and he runs that fast, he's going to skyrocket on draft boards, assuming he is healthy enough by the time we get to Indy. His stock is going to either rise or fall. He's not going to stay even when it comes to the combine. He's either going to work his way into the first round definitely, or he's probably going to work his way down to a late day two pick, just because he is a true boomer bust wide receiver. He's not polished as a route runner. There's a lot of he's extremely raw, but the traits you're getting to work with, you can't teach 6'3", 230 and potentially 4.4, even sub 4.4 speed. That's just incredible.
It is. So many athletes in this wide receiver class. It's going to be fun to watch where these guys go, who they end up with. And if your team needs a wide receiver, but you've got other needs, again, you can find one day two, day three, that's going to help your team pretty quickly. Role-playing wide receivers that can help you with straight line speed down the field. There's a lot of those guys as well. So keep an eye on this wide receiver class for sure. A group we don't need to spend a lot of time on, the tight ends. Brock Bowers is the guy at tight end. Andrew, is there anybody else who warrants day two consideration from you at the tight end position?
I think that Jatavion Sanders from Texas will get taken on day two. I'm not completely sold on his game just because he's not complete. I think he wants to be a good blocker, but I just don't know if he had the ability to really grow in that area. I'm not blaming the Texas coaching staff, but they didn't really try that hard to improve him in that area. So I'm excited to see what he can do at the NFL level. He's athletic. He's going to test pretty well. One guy that I think he was flying under the radar until the Senior Bowl, and that was Theo Johnson. He was the one tight end that played really well at the Senior Bowl week. 6'5", 257, the guy can block. He's probably going to run a solid 40. I'd imagine around 4.6. If he runs 4.6 at that size and he displays good hands like we've seen from him on tape, I think he's going to be one of those better pro than college tight ends. We see them every year coming out. Yeah. They don't produce in college because they've scheme fit or just they weren't utilized in that role. He did a lot of blocking at Penn State. But this guy does have good hands. He does know how to get open. He is a little bit unpolished as a route runner, but he has time to grow into that. I'd be willing to work with a guy who can come in and block day one and help me, as opposed to a guy like maybe, say, a Jaheim Bell from Florida State, who's just not the prototypical size. He's almost more of an H-back. Where do you fit him? You have to have the right scheme for a guy like that.
Yeah, so your top 10 here, obviously Brock Bowers, top five here, Brock Bowers number one, Jatavion Sanders at two, Cade Stover, Theo Johnson, and Jaheim Bell round out your top five. Cade Stover is intriguing to me because he had a lot more hype, I think, a couple years ago than he did this last season. It was kind of a down year for him production-wise, but he's still one of those guys that's a great locker room guy. We talked to Paris Johnson Jr. on our show last year, and Cade Stover was his guy. That was the guy that he was pushing the bell for, who ended up going back to school and just a stand-up guy. So I could see him pushing his way into day two, maybe late day two, potentially for a guy like him. But overall, not too flashy of a group. Might find a good blocking tight end or two in the middle portion of the draft. But Brock Bowers, it's Brock Bowers or bust at tight end this season if you're looking for one of those hybrid type players on the edge there. All right, Andrew, let's dive into the offensive line here. Offensive tackle and then interior offensive line. We're going to break them up that way. So let's talk about the tackles, and it's a really good tackle group. Andrew, I'll let you give your top five and then reasons why for each guy.
Olufoshanu is one, but not by much. I literally have an identical grade on him and Joe Alt. It really depends what you want. Foshanu, they're both going to test well, don't get me wrong, but Foshanu's got every athletic trait in the book. A couple areas where he can improve, sometimes just a tad bit slow with his feet. He reacts in his upper body, but sometimes the feet don't follow, and sometimes it causes a little bit of imbalance. Hasn't been enough to really affect him at the collegiate level, as we can see by it almost hardly ever even allowing a pressure, let alone a sack. So it is something that will need to be fixed at the NFL, but I think it's a very basic fix for a good offensive line coach. Alt, he's only going to be 20 years. He's only 20 years old, and it's 6'7". He does a good job of getting those pads alone, making a difference in the run game. We talked about Audric a minute ago, and many of the lanes that he actually did a really good job running to the left side, which is very unique for a power back running the left side. That's because Joe Alt, surprisingly, despite his 6'7" frame, the man is massive. He finds a way to get those pads low and move defenders backward in the run game. I think both these guys are pretty schematically versatile. I think Fashanu, if you can get him in an outside zone scheme where he can really use his mobility, I think that's ideal fit for him. All really doesn't matter. Just plug and play. Day one starter, going to be a Pro Bowler for the next 10 years. And I guess finishing out top five, I apologize. Talisa Fuaga, right tackle, extremely athletic. Love him as a run blocker. Latham from Alabama, I'm a little bit lower on just because he is a little bit slow at times. Not saying he's soft, but for the size that he brings, I wish I saw a little bit more consistency with his power. He's powerful. We've seen flashes. Just need to see more consistency from him. And then Amarius Mims, just another one-year wonder as an offensive line guy. It's just a matter of where he's going to fit. Do you play him on the left, right side in the NFL? Do you move him inside? I think he has the athleticism to play on the outside. But again, pad levels, just some technical issues is why I don't have him quite as high. But all these guys, first-round grades, I don't see any of them leaving the first round.
Huge guys, too. A lot of these guys are just massive. One guy I wanted to talk about who's outside your top five that a lot of people would have pushing these guys. You got him way down at number nine, Tyler Guyton out of Oklahoma. A lot of upside with Guyton, but you don't have him maybe quite as polished, or why would you lower him down in your rankings? A lot of people talking about Guyton in the first round conversation.
Yeah, I haven't completely finished Guyton's tape yet. I still have to go back and watch a little bit more of him to get a final evaluation. But just initially, I didn't see any wow trait of him. He's athletic, but for a guy that is going to test as well as everyone expects him to, you don't see it translated onto the field quite as much. And especially when it comes to the running game, sometimes his hands got a little bit, he didn't get grabby, but sometimes his hand placement is like, okay, he's getting really close to getting outside the pads. I don't know if he's just not accurate in landing those hands. Again, they're all minor things. All these guys are so closely graded together. I think Guyton will probably rise on my board if he tests as well as what people expect in Indy. And like I said, I still have to go and finish the tape on him. That's why he's a little bit lower. I haven't seen as much of him as I have some of the other prospects yet. But initially, I would say the hands thing is a minor concern. And just putting together, again, same thing we talked about with Mims and a couple other guys. And just being... And even to an extent, Fashanu, just getting the feet to follow with the rest of the body and just staying parallel, keeping the pads square, being able to maintain balance in pass protection on a consistent basis, all minor things. But he wasn't really pushed a whole lot against Big 12 defenders. There's not a whole lot of good pass rushers, so you didn't really get to see him tested a whole lot. And that's why I'm excited to see about him moving forward. Maybe in Indy, we see him run these drills, see how fluid he really is in moving.
How many tackles go in the top or in the first round?
I'm going to say seven with a chance of eight.
Okay. Yeah. It's a great group. They're going to go early. They're going to go fast. Left tackle, right tackle. It's a good group on both sides of the ball. All right. Interior offensive lineman. You got Troy Fontenu from Washington. Cedric Van Praan from Georgia. That's going to surprise some people. Graham Barton from Duke. And then Jackson Powers Johnson from Oregon at number four. And finally, Zach Frazier from West Virginia. A lot of centers here, Andrew, in your top five group. But some guys with some versatility as well when you talk about like Graham Barton. What do you see in this group of five here that makes you think that they can be really good football players at the next level?
Well, I guess you could argue that you could see eight or nine potentially go in the first round if you consider Fontenu and Barton as tackles, which is where they played primarily in college. I think Fontenu slides at least inside to guard, if not to even center. He has the length. He's going to test well. A lot of people see him going into center. I like him as a guard at the next level. I see the same thing for Graham Barton personally, but they're just the prototypical build. I like my guards. They have the athleticism. They can push forward, and they're not going to be a liability in pass protection either. They just have great balance to their game. I think as it pertains to some of the other guys, the centers, Van Praan, he's still my favorite because of that uncanny athleticism and the fact I don't know why he's not getting enough credit. I mean, maybe there's something I don't know about his personality. I don't know if he's toxic in the locker room or what. But every time I turn on his game, he's mauling people in the run game. We see Georgia consistently running the ball well on the ground, and we don't even know half the running back's names. And we're wondering, how is this happening? There's a lot of running straight through the middle. It's a lot of dive plays. It's not – some of these schemes are very basic. But Cedric Van Praan does such a good job just going north and south. And with his athleticism, he is schematically versatile. He can play literally any spot. I think this guy has the chance to be one of the best centers in the league. We're talking probably, and in my opinion, this is the best center prospect to come out since Creed Humphrey. And I think he can be on that level as Creed. The issue with a guy like Jackson Powers Johnson is he's such an anomaly for the center position. Can he perform that well at that size for a long term? You just have to question about long-term durability at center being that big. That's a concern. He's athletic and he has the chance to completely go off, but I think he's has the lowest floor of any of these guys. And with Zach Frazier, the other guy in the top five, he's just so consistent. Game in, game out, you know what you're getting. He may never be an all-pro guy, but he could maybe reach a Pro Bowl or two. He's going to be a consistent starter, and he's going to find his way to play in the league for many years because he's tough, he's physical, and he knows what his coaches want, and he knows how to deliver.
If you need a center, this is the year to need a center in the draft, and there's going to be options for you. There's some options further down as well that we're not going to get to in this show that we might be able to break down in some other shows coming up. But Andrew, it's a great group on offense. It really is. Outside of running back and tight end, it really feels like a group of offensive prospects that can have a lot of day one starters in the first round. Guys that are going to be selected early, guys are going to be playing early in their careers as well. Let's wrap up the offensive group here. Andrew, anybody else that stands out to you real quick from any of these groups that we've mentioned, or anything you want to say before we head out?
I just said it's going to be really rich on the offensive side of the ball. Don't let people tell you, oh, this, you know, running backs, because no running backs can go in the first round. Outside Brock Bowers, the tight end position's garbage. Looking at the offense in general, it's going to be so heavy in the first round of offense players. It's not even funny. And as we go into day two and day three, you're going to see your wide receivers. You're going to see running backs that are going to be making an instant impact in the NFL. I think Ladd McConkey and Roman Wilson are two guys that a lot of people are overlooking because they're not maybe the most attractive because they're not the biggest guys. Roman Wilson, I think, is going to run a 4.3 in the 40. Ladd McConkey is Julian Edelman reincarnated. I mean, he's not the most athletic guy, but he gets open. He's always open, and he always catches the ball. That's what teams love. He'd be a great fit for a team like LA that already has like a Puka Nacua. He's not the same type of receiver, but, you know, that guy who's just consistent from game to game. Coaches love those guys, and there's going to be a guy who's going to pick this guy up in probably the second or third round, and he's going to have immediate production. You're going to have a couple of these first-round guys that bust out. That like it happens every year, and it's like, why didn't we just wait and get a guy like Ladd McConkey on day two, and we'd have a really good wide receiver too, but we were so worried about getting that elite option in the first round and we couldn't develop him.
Absolutely. All right, that's going to do it for us here on the FFSN NFL Draft Preview Show. Next week on this show, we're going to break down the top five players by position on defense. For Andrew Wilbar, I'm Jeremy Betts. We'll talk to you next time here on the Fan Club.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.